Good morning. I want to visit with you today about something that I've been milling around in my mind for some time. It's been over a month ago and sitting in one of Sam's classes, and I believe it was him who made the comment about identity theft. And ever since then, I got thinking about that and wanted to share some thoughts with you today about identity theft. First of all, a good place to start any lesson like this is to define what you're going to be talking about. And so we ask the question, what is identity theft? And I think most of us know what that is. Unfortunately, I fear that some of you have probably experienced it to some degree and probably can tell us a whole lot more about it than I might be able to share with you today. I mean, there's a lot of talk about it. I kind of giggle at my father, who is obsessed, I think, anyways, with identity theft. I mean, he goes to extremes to make sure that his credit card numbers can't be stolen or used or taken by anyone else. I mean, we go into a place and he makes sure he gets all the carbons and copies of everything, of all the transactions, so that he can take them home and shred them, put them in a mason jar and bury them out in the backyard, just to make sure that, you know, nobody can take advantage of his good credit. There's a lot of talk these days about identity theft, but the bottom line is, identity theft is people stealing your identity. They seek to take advantage of maybe your good credit or your good name to be able to get something or have something at cost to you rather than at a cost to them. Identity theft occurs when someone uses your personally identifying information, like your name, your social security number, a credit card number, doing it without your permission to commit fraud or numerous other crimes. I find it interesting that the Federal Trade Commission estimates that 9 million people a year suffer from the crime of identity theft. And as I thought about that, I thought, you know, if we had a cancer that affected 9 million people a year, we'd have a telethon about it and be raising money to do something about it. And so I'm wondering when that's going to start for identity theft. The crime takes many forms when you think about identity theft. Identity thieves might rent an apartment in your name, obtain a credit card in your name, or establish a telephone account or various other types of accounts using your identity. You might not find out about the theft until you receive a credit report or a credit card statement and see a transaction on there that you know nothing about, or worse yet, a creditor calls you and wonders when you're going to make a payment for something you know nothing about. And in some rare cases, the police showing up at your door to arrest you for a crime you know nothing about, but a crime that was committed in your name. Identity theft is serious. While some identify, or some victims of identity theft can quickly resolve the problems and take care of it, others, though, it can take years sometimes to clean up their credit reports and the damage done by identity theft, and cost hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars to repair that damage. Some consumers victimized by identity theft may lose out on job opportunities or be denied loans of all types, or even being admitted to certain colleges. All kinds of things like that can be complications because of being a victim of identity theft. Well, how do thieves steal your identity? To identity thieves, this information, your social security number, your credit card number, anything about you is like gold to a skilled identity theft or identity thief. And there are a variety of ways they might get that information. One of them is, we call it dumpster diving. How many of you in college were dumpster divers? Seems like the popular time to do that. The end of the year and the college students are throwing away very valuable things, and you go back around and jump in the dumpster and reclaim those valuable things. When Kathy was a dorm parent at York, Nebraska. It was amazing. I think we furnished several homes of ours for years from things that we pulled out of dumpsters. My son is a proud dumpster diver yet today, and he's nearly 22 now. Or are you 22 now? He's 22. Dumpster diving, rummaging through the trash, looking for that little receipt with some information on it about you that can be used by somebody else. Another method is called skimming. They steal credit card or debit card numbers by using a special storage device when processing your card. So that person you trust at the store, when you give them your card, may in fact be the thief that is somehow setting your number aside in some form or fashion to use it themselves, but more frequently to sell it to somebody else who is going to abuse it. Fishing is another way, not the kind from a boat, but the kind where people pretend to be maybe a financial institution or a company, and they send spam or pop-up messages to you on your email, and they're asking you to reveal some sort of personal information. And it's amazing how many people will trust those things and do exactly that. Sometimes people will change your address on you with the idea of diverting some mail, like maybe a bill for an account that they've set up in your name, and they don't want you to find out about it yet, so they change your address. It's amazing to me how many times we can go into places and do official business, like changing addresses and different things like that, and nobody ever asks for any proof of anything. And so it's very easy in many places of business to go in and do these transactions pretending that you're somebody and creating a great deal of difficulty. Old-fashioned stealing is just another way that it happens. Stealing your wallet, your purse, your mail, and in that mail, what do they find? Bank statements and credit card statements, pre-approved credit offers. Be careful when you throw that mail away. You probably ought to be shredding it, burning it, doing something so that when somebody comes along dumpster diving in your trash can, they don't find something valuable. And another way that I learned about is called pretexting. They use false pretenses to obtain your personal information from financial institutions or telephone companies, utility companies, or what other source might have it, again, to use that information for some gain for themselves. We certainly do have an identity. Each and every one of us has an identity that is defined by our Social Security number, our driver's license number, our credit cards, a long string of certificates that we've gotten from college or training or different workshops that we've gone to, all sorts of documents like our insurance documents and different things like this. But we didn't gather here today to get a lesson on personal finance and identity theft. As I thought about all of that, the question that came to me is, well, what about our spiritual identity? We have that too, along with all these other things that I've rambled on about that identify us, these numbers and documents and certificates and, you know, our jobs and our families. All of those things certainly create for us an identity. But do we not also have a spiritual identity? Well, of course we do. So is there such a thing as spiritual identity theft? And I want you to know there absolutely is. And that's really what I want to talk to you about today. Today I want to address, shall we call it a crime of spiritual identity theft? I think the word crime is not strong enough to identify, to talk about this problem. Again, identity theft can easily be defined as pretending to be somebody you are not. And this is usually done for the purpose of obtaining benefits that are not due to you or getting them at a cost to somebody else. Spiritual identity theft, then, is pretending, if you will, to be a Christian when you're not. Pretending to be a child of God when indeed you are not. Acting like a Christian when you are not behaving like a Christian. Speaking with the authority of Christ when in fact you do not even yield to the authority of Christ in your own life. Spiritual identity theft is the stealing of Christ's identity. And so with that in mind, maybe we should ask ourselves, well, who was Jesus? What was his identity? Beginning with Jesus' baptism, he was given identity that came from God. God called him his son, whom he loved. And we read that in Matthew again, chapter 3, verses 16 and 17. Let me read that again. As soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up from the water, out of the water. And at that moment, heaven was opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." Essentially, we were given the messages, here's who you need to listen to now. Now you know who he is. Now you know what he does and what he says is important. You know his identity. He is my son, the son of God. And consider what this identity allowed Jesus to do. In Matthew 4, beginning at verse 1, we read about the temptation of Jesus. And it reads, "Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. And the tempter came to him and said, 'If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread.' Jesus answered, 'It is written, man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God.' Then the devil took him to the holy city and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. He said, 'If you are the Son of God,'" see how he's questioning his identity? "If you are the Son of God, if this is really true, then how about proving it?" "He said, 'Throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and they will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone.' And Jesus answered him," here in verse 7, "says, 'It is also written, do not put the Lord your God to the test.' Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. 'All this I will give you,' he said, 'if you will bow down and worship me.' And Jesus said to him, 'Away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only.' Then the devil left him, and his angels came and attended to him." What I want you to consider here is that I truly believe because of who Jesus was, he was empowered to do what he did with the devil at that time. He knew who he was, he knew what he was, and he stood there boldly and confidently as he was tempted by Satan and sent Satan on his way. It's important that we know who we are. Later on, again in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus asks the questions, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" And his disciples responded, beginning in verse 13, Matthew 16, "When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi," this is where he asked the questions, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" Verse 14, they replied, "Well, some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter spoke up, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." It was very important that Jesus knew who he was and what he was. And it's very important that we as his disciples know that as well. I'd like to suggest suggest to you that spiritual identity theft has been around long before we ever talked about any other kind of identity theft. Consider how Jesus and his disciples warned us about spiritual identity theft every time they talked to us or mentioned false prophets. Again, identity theft is nothing new. Here's just one example from 2 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning at verse 12. "And I will keep on doing what I am doing in order to cut the ground from under those who want an opportunity to be considered equal with us in the things that they boast about. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It is not surprising then if his servants masquerade as servants of righteousness. Their end will be what their actions deserve." Identity theft, spiritual identity theft, pretending to be of Christ when in reality you may know nothing of Christ. Again, it's important that we know who we are. Knowing who we are, knowing what we are, creates balance in our life. It creates focus in our lives. It gives us direction in our lives. Consider, if you will, your teen years, those of us who are beyond those, or those of you who are maybe in those, or those early 20s. Think about those. Were those not turbulent times? I'm hoping I'm not the only one who struggled through my teen years and early 20s. And as I think back about that now, I really think part of the reason, the biggest part of the reason why those times are so turbulent for us is because we're trying to figure out who we are. I mean, think about the major life decisions that we make at those times in our lives. They're huge. And again, I think back to our York College days and how many times we saw those young college students that Kathy worked with and changing their minds. And it was all about trying to figure out, who am I? What am I? But what's interesting too, think about that, as soon as you figured that out, it got easy, didn't it? Because now you knew what to focus on. You knew where you were going. And the path, if you will, the directions, just seemed to open up. And a cloud of confusion that was created by not knowing who you are just lifted. And it's so important that we as God's children too come to that same point in our lives as we commit to Him through our obedience, as we act upon our faith, as we become living examples of Christianity. It just becomes so much easier. There's focus, there's direction, there's balance. When you know who you are or what you are, then we know how to behave and what to do. Or at least we know what to be working towards. And that's important as well. Consider from 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 11, Paul writes here, "When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me." And as I thought about that passage, I thought, you know, there is that progression through life. And that's what I think part of what this passage is talking about, part of what Paul is referring to. As we grow into who and what we are, things just fall into place. I remember when I left the classroom and became an administrator, became a principal, I struggled my first couple of years in that position because it was new to me and I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to act as a principal. I didn't know how to act as a supervisor of a building full of teachers and staff. And I made a lot of mistakes because of that, because I didn't have it figured out. But as I came to realize that part of my problem was, is I kept acting and thinking like a teacher, it was creating problems for me at the next level, if you will, as an administrator. And when I figured that out and stopped acting like a teacher and started acting more like what a boss should act like, well, then things started to fall into place. And there was focus, and there was balance, and there was direction. And it got a lot better. Think about what Proverbs 22:6 says. It talks to us about helping our children figure out who they are. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. Now, most of the time when that passage is shared, we apply it in the sense of spiritual things. The idea is, you know, raise your child up with the good book, and from this they'll never depart. And I think that is an appropriate application of that text. But when you study that, in my study of that, it's more about vocational kinds of things than it is spiritual kinds of things. Although I think the application is fair there to look at it in a spiritual sense. I think it is correct. And really what it's about is it's kind of like, maybe think about it this way. If you have a child who is bent, and that's a term from that passage, who is bent, who leans towards being a carpenter, well, don't try to make them an electrician then, or a computer wizard, or a teacher. Part of our responsibility as parents is to help our kids figure out who and what they are. More specifically, to figure out what did God create them to be. I think lots of times as parents, and I know I've done this to my kids, wait, you'll hear them say amen in a moment, we try to get them to fit our image of what we think they should do and what we think they should be. And you know what? If you figured it out right, and I believe in a lot of ways, sometimes it's just a guess, then you didn't have any problems. But what if it was wrong? Think of the strife. Think of the turmoil. Think of the battles there, the frustration, the disappointment that you put upon yourself because you've placed expectations on your children that God didn't prepare them for. What is their identity? That passage talks about figuring that out and then supporting them to go that way. And when they go the way they've been bent, created by God, that's where the success is. That's where, that's why it says, when they are old, they'll not turn from it. Because it's right. Because it's right. Most of you probably don't know this about me, but I participated many, many years ago in a demolition derby. And greatest experience in my life. People ask me, well, what was that like? And I said, you know what, when you're driving down the road and everything you ever wanted to do to the other drivers and you couldn't do because it's illegal, you can do that in a demolition derby. And people cheer for you when you do it. It's great. One of the things that I learned in that process, though, of building a car for demolition derby, is one of the things the old-timers did is they would put creases in the car in certain places and cut the car in certain places on the body and the frame to get the car to bend in a certain direction so that when it was smashed, they could control how the car would collapse and bend so that the car could keep running in as beat-up fashion as it could get, because that's the goal, to be the last one running. And again, I think that's what we have to do from a spiritual perspective. Find the ways that God has prepared us, made us to be. What is our bend? What is the natural way that we are to go in life? This is important because when we don't know who we are, when we are working against what God has in store for us, we become vulnerable to Satan. When we don't know who we are, we can fall victim to false prophets. It makes us vulnerable. It makes us weak. And Satan knows that. And he is the master of hitting us when we are down. And one of those times when we become most vulnerable, I believe, is when we don't know who we are. Sometimes people, and here's another interesting thing, another little point about identity, spiritual identity theft that I just feel compelled to mention here. Sometimes people don't know they are the victims of identity theft. There's an interesting and I believe terrifying twist to spiritual identity theft that we need to know here. Some people fall victim to spiritual identity theft by being led into what they believe is Christianity. They put their trust in someone many times other than Christ, and they believe they have found Christ when in fact they have been lied to and have fallen victim to a liar. I think one of the most sobering passages in the New Testament is found in Matthew chapter 7, and I believe it has application to this point I want to make. In Matthew 7, beginning at verse 21, it says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." Many will say to me, on that day, I believe the judgment day is what they're referring to here, "Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles?" In anything I've ever been able to get my hands on and study this passage, I find it interesting that when it gets to verse 22, there's not any question. There's never any question about the fact that these people did these things. They prophesied in the name of the Lord. They did marvelous things in the name of the Lord. They performed miracles in the name of the Lord. If these people were living next door to you, you would look at them and go, "Wow! That is a super person. That is a spiritual person. That is an amazing person." But this is what Jesus said to them in verse 23. "Then I will tell them plainly, I don't know you. In fact, I never knew you. Away from me, you evil doers." You see, from our worldly perspective, they looked amazing, spiritual, holy. But the key here is in verse 21. "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." I share that with you to give a warning. Are you sitting here today thinking or knowing that you're a Christian? We'll talk more about that here in a moment. Consider this as well. We are guilty of spiritual identity theft when we claim to be acting as Christ when indeed we are not. Consider, if you would the things people see us do truly represent Christ? Are we seen as the Good Samaritan or the Pharisee? When I had an office in a church building, I had a little sign up on my wall that said, and you've all heard this, so let me just remind you of it. It said something to the effect is, "If you were arrested for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you?" Well, would there? If there's not enough evidence, then you're guilty of spiritual identity theft. Do our actions model the gospel of Christ? Consider the words again from Paul in 2 Corinthians 3 and verse 18, where he writes, "And we who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory are being transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit." It makes me think that we as Christians are really like solar cells, and we absorb power, if you will, from God. We absorb power, if you will, from our Lord, and then we just give it off and then empower others. Is that not another way to look at the Great Commission given to each and every one of us? we are guilty of spiritual identity theft when we claim to be speaking as Christ when indeed we are not. Do the words that come out of our mouth encourage or discourage? Consider Ephesians 4:29. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Do our words teach, reveal the gospel of Christ? Again, we have been commissioned as so. It's time to think about where you're at. I want us all to consider our own spiritual identity this morning. But as we do that, as we make this diagnosis, if you will, we have to ask the right question to get the right example, or to get the right diagnosis, to truly come to an understanding of who and what we are. And I brought this up here as a reminder for this illustration. I have a 1996 Ford Explorer. And for probably 2 years, this Ford Explorer had a little problem. And that little problem was, is all of a sudden it wouldn't start. You'd go out there and you'd sit down in it and you'd turn the key and it would turn over, but it would never start. Ask Caleb and Lakin about that. They borrowed it and went to Omaha once. Call me up. Thanks, Dad. It won't start. I said, well, good luck. They're in Omaha. I'm in Independence, Iowa. What it was doing is you could sit there 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 3 hours, 5 hours, and eventually it would start. First time that happened, I called up the garage. I had them tow it into the shop. And as I'm sitting in my office watching the tow truck start to tow it, I realized it's running. And he drove it up on the tow truck. And I run out there and I said, did you just drive that up on the tow truck? Yeah. I said, well, what do you think I called you for? It wouldn't start. Well, it started for me. So I had him take it into the garage anyways, because this had happened a couple of times. Got to get it fixed. I tell you, I have spent over almost 2 years hundreds of dollars. I don't want to tell you exactly the dollar amount, because you would just look at me and go, why didn't you just get rid of it? Hundreds of dollars trying to figure out what the problem is. And I talked to mechanics, and I was getting nowhere. And sometimes it would go months without doing it, though. And so we're thinking, oh, okay, it's done. Then all of a sudden it would start happening again. And it just did it here a couple of weeks ago. And I'm getting frustrated. So I got on the internet, and I got into one of these places where you talk to a mechanic, and when they get you a good answer, you pay a little charge. And so I did that. And finally, I had a mechanic ask me a question in trying to diagnose this problem that nobody had ever asked me before. And he said, does your check engine light come on when you try to start it? I said, well, I don't know. I've never watched it. He said, well, so I said, next time this happens, I'm going to monitor that. And I said, by the way, why? Because I wanted to understand why he was asking me that question. And he explained it to me. He said, well, that little check engine light is supposed to come on just for a blink. That tells you that it's turning on the computer in your car. And that's probably what the problem is. And I said, well, could that be an intermittent problem, happen once in a while? He said, oh, sure. He said, it's the most common intermittent problem that I have ever dealt with. And so I said, well, I'll just have to wait till it acts up again before I can check it out. That might be a couple of months. Lucky me. It was within a half hour. Step out there to go to lunch, go to turn on, and it won't do it. But now I know what to look for. Now, the mechanics for months said, well, check this and check this. Is it getting gas? Is it getting spark? And I was like, how do you check those things? You know, and then once they told me how to do that, well, you don't have your toolbox when you're out there and these problems happen and you're sitting somewhere and you can't do it. So anyways, I finally had something I could work on. And he was right. The check engine light wasn't coming on. So I emailed him back all excited, and I said, it's not coming on. He said, well, that's what the problem is. Go change the relay. $10. Less than $10. Do you know how many hundreds of dollars I have spent? And hours we have sat in parking lots and various places waiting for this thing to decide to just work again. $10. But here's my point. Here's my point. Somebody had to ask the right question. Somebody had to ask the right question in order for us to figure out that it was this instead of the hundreds and hundreds of other things, dollars I spent on other things. Well, now I have a 1996 Ford Explorer that starts every time and has lots of new parts on it. I plan to drive it for years. As we think about our own spiritual identity today, we have to ask the right question. And the question that I want to ask us this morning is, are you saved? Are you saved? Now, that's not the only question we need to ask. Some of you are sitting there and saying, yeah, I'm saved. Okay, how do you know it? How do you know you're saved? Can you take me to this word and show me how you were saved? Amen, if you can. But if it's just a feeling you have, or it's because of somebody else other than Christ that you think you're saved, I want to suggest to you that maybe, just maybe, you're guilty of spiritual identity theft. And I don't want you to be the one they talk about in Matthew chapter 7 when Jesus says, who are you? I don't know you. I've never known you. Today, if you know you're not a child of God and you want to be, then today is the day to claim your spiritual identity and identify yourself with Him, to become a child of God through obedience to the gospel as this book talks about. Or if you have any other need today, we also extend the invitation to you. Let us pray for you. Let us help you, whatever the need is. Won't you come while together we stand and sing the song of encouragement?